Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere else where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email. LonghornRepublicPod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan all year long, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by Kyle Hustle himself, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I will take that, Kyle Hustle. It feels like it. It's been a busy one. Start of the year has been fierce. Can't believe it's only been 1 month. I've been hustling, been moving, been grooving, been shaking, been making things happen. Gerald, how are you?
January has been the longest 6 months of my life that I've ever experienced. No, it's one of those like, oh my gosh, it's going so slow. Oh my gosh, it's going so fast moments in January. But it is like, we're recording this on the penultimate day of January and things are mixed, we'll say. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Mixed results, I guess. Not really mixed results. Bad results for the basketball team on the men's side. Mixed results for the ladies. Mixed results in the natatorium. Just an interesting sports outing overall. We'll obviously start with those Texas Longhorns. After back-to-back ranked wins, Texas goes on the road to Provo in front of a sellout 18,000 folks and people wearing horns down shirts that the BYU staff made them take off and lost 84-72. Not a great outing for Texas, getting double digit dubbed on that one. And then they came out and played University of Houston, fell behind big at half, made it close at the midway point toward the in the fourth quarter, actually led for quite a bit, but could not hold on and fell 76-72 for a pair of ranked losses. And they're sliding back down. They were this time last week in the upper half of the Big 12. Now they are one spot away from the bottom, I think, if memory serves. So what a difference a week makes.
But honestly, weirdly, and this is just silly, their net ranking went up.
So did their KenPom.
And their KenPom, because they played some really tough competition and especially played, you know, one of, right now, if you just look at the rankings, a presumptive Final Four team, right, in Houston, and should have won that game, honestly. They played them tough.
Multiple times.
One way to put it is they played them tough, but should have won it is the way that I will phrase that. I'll go back a little bit to the BYU game, right? An 18,000-person crowd in Provo, you know, BYU shooting just lights out, 64%. From the floor, hard to win that. I will give some credit to the BYU coaches. They saw something in Texas very clearly. They average 31 three-point attempts per game coming into that game. They took only 17. They averaged 25 points in the paint and scored 40. They basically flipped the entire script for what Texas prepared for, and they said, look, this is a dangerous Texas team coming off two ranked wins, Oklahoma and BU. Now they want to come into Provo. We gotta flip it up on them. They hit a buzzer beater to go up at the half, 44-41, and then I think it was basically a 10-2 run to open up the second half, and it was never close again after that. But the Houston game, Gerald, you could have turned it off and gone to bed early and said, okay, Houston separated and blew UT out. Like that would have been something that made sense. And then he would have woken up and said, wait a minute, what happened here? The UT fought back and got it to overtime. If you didn't watch that second half and you just watched the first half, you'd say, yeah, you know, U of H was the best team. UT had just, you know, dominant stretches in that second half. They were playing swarming defense, moving the ball in transition, penetrating and getting easy looks for Dylan Mitchell, who looked like a star in this one, getting him looks at the rim running constantly. You know, they rebounded okay for stretches, maybe even good for stretches. U of H just is so committed to the offensive glass that you have to be that committed to the defensive glass or they will beat you. And you could make an argument that was the case. You could make an argument that Texas missing some free throws and U of H hitting theirs was the difference. I mean, ultimately, it was a game that went to overtime and then got to a free three-throw battle at the end that U of H ultimately, you know, won. It was a toss-up game right to the very end. Even 4 points is a bit misleading in the final scoreline. It was a one-point game for the last 10-ish minutes. A fun game, a good game, an electric, moody crowd, but man, it would have really been a good statement win for Texas to win 3 out of 4 ranked games, as they have, I think, a stretch of six ranked games coming. But to get 3 of the 4 would have really said something. I mean, again, 2 out of 4 isn't bad, but you lost at home. No matter who the opponent is, you hate that. Those are starting to stack up.
Yeah, that's not a great deal. And honestly, if we had come out of this and Texas had won one of the last two games, I still would have called that stretch a massive success. And so it's hard for me to feel like ultimately super disappointed by this. But on that same token, Texas had it in their hands and just could not get it done. And so that's it. That's insanely frustrating for me, right? To see them not be able to close that out, not be able to really finish it out like they needed to. And so, you know, Texas got good minutes from the guys that you expect, right? Dylan Disu, Max Asmus, Dylan Mitchell, right? On that starting group all did what you need them to do. But ultimately, Texas only shot, you know, they made 6 of their 20 three-pointers, right? They missed 6 free throws. Like, there were opportunities there for them to win this game. And even in regulation, the ball was in their hands with an opportunity to win the game as the buzzer went. They had a lead with 90 seconds left in the game, right? Like, that's a thing for Texas to have to, you know, stare in the face and really think about, like, how did we end up here? Because there, again, there was an opportunity for Texas to really, and I wish they had, they challenged Jamal Sheed more in overtime. He went through an entire overtime period with 4 fouls. I wish they had gone at his chest quite a bit more in overtime. Because he's their best player, right? And so that, like, if you can get to him and get him pick up that extra foul, things are different, right? So there's a lot of opportunities to look at here. But all in all, like, I think this is exactly what Texas is going to be all year. It's going to be a team that has some really high highs and some really frustrating lows. And I think the 2 ranked wins before that are the examples of the high highs. And I think what BYU came out and did to Texas, and frankly, Houston is one of the most physical, banging, big body teams. And that's not necessarily what Texas is built to do at its peak, right? Like, you've got Dylan Disu, and then it's kind of like, maybe somebody else can jump in for that. But like, outside of the bodies, like, there's not a ton of physicality. Even the tallest guy on the team might be the skinniest guy on the team.
Yeah, this was a Shed versus Shedrick battle, which was weird. But Shedrick just doesn't, yeah, you know, it's like, he's not the 7-footer who's just dominating the paint like we've been dreaming of for a few years in Austin. Dylan Mitchell is really an oversized 3, right? Like, he plays inside, but I think his future probably, you know, is more, he needs to work on his shot a bit. But as a 3, he's not a banger the way that, you know, you want a power forward to be at the next level, or even at this level. He's a dynamic dunker and has leap out of the gym ability and all those things, and can go up and block shots when he's committed on that end. But, you know, that he's honestly a guy, you saw it in this game where he you know, came out and guarded Shed on the ball sometimes. He's almost better as an on-ball defender than the off-ball help defender blocking shots that you would want from your bigs. Yeah, Texas had a tough challenge getting, you know, big, strong, physical, gonna pound the paint, you know, manhandle you, U of H. But when you have a game where LJ Cryer, who you could argue maybe is their best player, just really had an off night, he was 2 of 9 from 3, or, you know, Shed, who probably, it's one of those two, and on the night it was Shed, was even 3 for 9 from the 3-point, you hope Texas can take advantage of that, but they just didn't shoot, right? They didn't shoot well. You have Asmus, an all-time 3-point shooter, 2 for 8 himself. So the 3 best shooters on the floor, the 2 for U of H and 1 for Texas, none of them hit. So it was everyone else. The crazy thing is, right, think about a game that goes to overtime. All you need to find is 1 point. Max Asmus doesn't ever miss free throws. He missed 2 in this game. Commentators were baffled when he missed 1. He missed his second one. There was, even though they only missed 6 free throws, there was multiple, at least 2, where it was 1-1, right? You make the first one, not only do you get that point, you get a chance at a second. So there's a lot of found points there. I think, you know, when Big Body for U of H fouled out, they put a young buck in there, and he immediately had like a just kind of jumped up above the rim and threw his hand towards it and dunked a putback home. Texas had two putback dunk attempts that just didn't go in, right? Again, like, it's literally a game of inches, a game of points. They could have, honestly should have won this. I'm not going to put it all on Tyrese Hunter, but there's a point where they make a big defensive stop. And they did come up with some big defensive stops. It's what you and I have lamented about this team, is sometimes their defensive focus and especially intensity isn't there. They had it for large stretches of this game. They made a defensive stop late, run the floor. And so, okay, you get the easy basket, take it, take the lead, and see the game out. But if it's not there, everyone knows, every veteran guard will, you know, is taught, pull it back out, run the clock out, get your best shot, right? You don't have to get it in transition if it's not there. Hunter kind of gets caught jumping for a pass in midair, throws a turnover late, gets sent to overtime, right? Good defense on Texas to even force overtime at that point after that, but that should have been the game-winning possession for Texas. And it's just unfortunate. There was multiple plays that could have gone the other way. But again, it's I'm not sitting here crying losing to the number four team. I'm disappointed at the opportunity that they didn't take advantage of.
That's the struggle for me. That's the frustration for me, is that Texas, again, had the opportunity. They had that last, and that game winner was so rushed. Like, it's like, I think back to it. I in the moment, I was like, he could have taken at least another two steps and put that ball up. But again, you know, this is, I think, what Texas is going to be. And I think, you know, Texas is still squarely in the NCAA tournament field. And I think this is the kind of team that could create some problems early in the NCAA tournament. I don't think they're going to be, they're not built like a Final Four team, I don't think, but they've got an opportunity to upset some folks and to make some folks upset in March. So
there, if Gerald, on that point, if they are a on a night where they're hitting shots, they beat this U of H team and just about, you know, any other team on their schedule, yeah. Right? When you shoot 30%, 6-for-20 from behind the line, if you're just, you think about back to last year's tournament when Serge Ibari Rice went in Fuego and, you know, Texas was just lights out. If they could get one of those nights where their shooters are hitting, you have a Disu night where he just, the hoop looks huge and he can't miss. He was 5-of-14 in this one. You know, if they have one of those nights, if you get a Hunter night, right? He only had 5 points in this one, but just a night where he goes on or you know, any one of their players who could get hot, they can beat any team in the tournament, and I firmly believe that. But do I expect them to string together 4 straight of those games? I still need some things to prove anything closer, remotely close to that.
I think there is a lot left to prove. Speaking of a lot left to prove, Texas going to TCU this weekend in Fort Worth, and then, oh yeah, another ranked opponent, number 11 Iowa State at home. The Big 12, we said it in the preview, is going to be the ball of knives, and lo and behold, it's not knives, it's machetes. So that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. And so another interesting week, we'll say, for the hardwood. Number 10 women's basketball suffers an absolutely stunning loss to those bottom-feeding dirt burglars at home, 91-87. But then get back into the swing of things after Vic Schaefer lit a fire underneath them to top Cincinnati, 67-50, never trailing a single time in that game. So starting with OU, Texas had a lead, blew a lead, didn't hit free throws. OU hit their free throws. That's all she wrote. Vic Schaefer was very upset about the effort or lack thereof from the team after that one, and let them know it. Vic Schaefer did a little talking to his team through the media after that one, and it seems to have made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, good on Vic. I think you've seen this since he's been here. It's never been a surprise. He motivates in the right way, and the players seem to respond to it. He's not an easy coach to play for because he demands a lot, but it seemed to work because, I mean, that OU game, and he was right, it was just a lack of effort. They were the better team against OU. I mean, there's no real stat when you look at it that says, oh, OU blew Texas out in this category, right? Except maybe they had the same number of turnovers and OU, you know, led on points off turnovers 16-6, which, you know, that there could be the difference of the game. They assisted on 21 of their made baskets to Texas's 10. So maybe you could argue they were moving the ball better as well, or setting up, again, a Roy Harmon size hole. But and no excuses needed, right? Texas let a rival come in to their house and beat them at a point when they were, you know, a top 10 team who had some stuff going. And you hope it's just a wake up call, right? And again, starting just looking at the OU, because I think the wake up call came in Cincy. There were some good things to take away, right? Madison Booker continues to light it up, 29-6-3. Eighth UT freshman to go over 100 assists again, playing without Roy Harmon running the point. And Shea Holly, just want to give shout out, give flowers to longtime. Do everything that the coach needs, run the floor, take charges, you know, play defense, take a spot on the bench, do whatever you need. Shea Holly came in this one and honestly shot them back into it, right? When OU had a chance to maybe pull away, she was great all throughout, shooting 10 for 12 to get to her 22 points, maybe her best game in the Burnt Orange. And they needed it because it was an off game for the other guard, for Shayla Gonzalez, who shot just 1 of 10.
Shaylee rebounded in the next game for the Horns. She had 13 points, 6 rebounds, had her 500th career assist in that 17-point win over the Bearcats. Became the first team in the Big 12 to out-rebound the Bearcats in that one with an absolute dominant defensive performance, and the usual suspects showed back up on offense.
That's right. Taylor Jones was huge in this one. When you talk about just since he wanted to win by playing big, and Texas said, well, we're bigger. Taylor Jones, who's just having an unbelievable year again, fully healthy finally after what seems like forever. She's really, really coming into her own. Put up just a wonderful stat line: 13 points, nine rebounds, and a career high 7 blocks to go with 3 steals. Like, just filling the stat sheet in the most fun ways. 5 blocks, 5 of those 7 in the first quarter. Like, if you just want to come out and say no, you will get nothing easy inside. 5 blocks in the first quarter from your center will do that.
Texas improves to 12-0 when they hold opponents under 60 points, 34-0, 34-0, love what you want to call it, over the past 2 seasons when they do that. Texas heads to Waco on Thursday to take on the Baylor Bears, who just announced they're retiring Brittany Griner's jersey, finally. Won't hear me say many nice things about Baylor, but that should have happened a long time ago, and I'll let you put 2 and 2 together as why it took a new basketball coach to get that done in Waco. Number 4 men's tennis wins the ITA kickoff Texas Regional Championship to advance to the ITA National Indoor Championship. They knocked off UTSA 4-1 and then did the same thing to Oklahoma State 4-1 in the regional championship.
Yeah, they dropped the doubles against UTSA and then won 4 straight. That's Paziri, Braswell, Micah, PYB, and Lucas Brown on Sunday against Oklahoma State. That same 4-1, but they won the doubles, then got 3 singles against Paziri, Micah Braswell, PYB, the common denominators there. This will get them to the ITA National Indoors, I believe, for the 5th straight time. Those will take place in New York in mid-February.
This marks Bruce Burke's 100th win as the head coach of the University of Texas, going for 101 on Sunday against number 9 Stanford at the Texas Tennis Center. On the ladies' side, they sweep their region of the ITA Texas Regional Championship to advance to the National Indoors. 4-0 over those Baylor Bears on Saturday, 4-0 over FSU on Sunday. They've got a little bit of a longer break. They've got an extra week before that, but that'll take place February 9th in Seattle.
Yeah, this was they won doubles in both of these. Rapolu and Shavadapone both wins in this one were the common denominators. So solid. This is a team, again, as we've said, is not top led, but is as strong as anyone 2-3, you know, 2-6, or 3-6 especially. So they're going to beat a lot of teams. And I love that the men went out and said 4-1, that's pretty good. And the women said, yeah, we got that sweep all the way to the ITA Indoor Nationals.
I got no jokes. I wanted to make one, but I couldn't make one again. Up next, 4. The ladies, they'll have Wisconsin on Saturday, Georgia on Sunday. And again, they've got a week until they go to Seattle for the National Indoor. Speaking of indoor sports, the Natatorium was hopping this weekend. The number 2 women's swimming team defeated number 10 North Carolina State and got I don't know how it works, but they won 9 events against Duke the next day. So 130-68 over NC State, and then 9 event wins over the Blue Devils.
Yeah, there's number 10 NC State and number 17 Duke on their trip to North Carolina. A good challenge for a team that, you know, most years it's flip, but this is the year that the women have the much better chance to bring home the national championship. Talk a little bit about the men, but 7 pool records against NC State, just leaving their mark in the Tar Heel State. I don't know if that's what they call it for the swimming, but the Tar Heel State. Bridget O'Neill sweeps the springboard, winning the 1 and 3. Emma Karn, Lydia Jacoby, Olivia Bray, and Ava Longi set the pool record in the 200 medley relay. Kelly Pash won the 200 free, 200 IM, both with pool record times. Emma Stickland also a pool record in the 100 fly. Anna Lent won the 100 breasts with the third best time in the NCAA this year. Stickland Long, Emma Davidson, and Grace Cooper set the pool record in the 200 free. And back to Pash, Longi, Davidson, and Gamel. Pool record, stop me if you've heard that one before, in the 400 free.
Absolutely ridiculous. Again, 9 wins over the Blue Devils. On the men's side, they fall to number 3, NC State, 130-92, but they top Duke for that one.
Yeah, they won 12 events at Duke, and NC's, you know, stop number 1. They had 4 victories, sweeping the springboards. The diving was great all weekend. And a pair of pool records, went 1 and 2 on both diving events, basically with Noah Duperre and Nick Harris swapping the 1 and 3 between winner and runner-up in those. And then Luke Hobson swam a 200 free, season best, set a pool record, the third fastest swim in the country this year. And then great news that you like to see. In his first competition with the Horns this season, Jake Foster added another pool record with a swim of 51.33 in the 100 breast, the fastest time in the NCAA this season. So getting Jake Foster back, a guy who's been focused on Olympics and international competition, is big for the close to the season. Obviously one of the best swimmers in the country, honestly, in the world, Jake Foster. So good to have him back competing with this team, which, you know, it's odd to see them almost in the double digits at number 9 for men. But, you know, this is the end of the era. As we know, this is Eddie Reese's last season. So these guys want to try to swim as hard as they can through to the end, see what they can do, maybe get frosty in the national championships and see what happens. But, a little bit of room to make up, as you saw against a true national title favorite in NC State at home.
Next up for them, Senior Day, Friday, February the 2nd. This will be Eddie Reese's final dual home meet. So the GOAT doing his swan song. And then finally, after weeks of rumors about who would be the DL coach, Steve Sarkisian pulls the trigger and hires Miami Dolphins assistant defensive line coach Kenny Baker, who spent some time with the Dolphins, also spent some time in college, but not the NFL D-line coach that we were expecting.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Kenny Baker, if anyone pretended like they saw this one coming or even knew exactly his background, they're you know, lying for clout. This was a surprise to everyone. You know, the most common tweet or article this week is, who is Kenny Baker? Which makes sense, right? It's we know a little bit, right? He was under Vic Fangio with your Miami Dolphins this year, worked on that defensive line that I think was second or third in the league in sacks. You know, obviously Vic Fangio is the brains behind any Vic Fangio defense, but their defensive line was one of the strengths of that team for sure. I think they were also fourth in rushing yards per attempt allowed, third in sacks, second in quarterback knockdowns. There you go. And one of the lowest in blitz percentage in the league. So that's a defensive line statistic right there. I think I trust Sark on this one. It's basically where I'm going to live it, right? It's, you know, he needs to be able to recruit. He came from Western Kentucky before coming to the Longhorns. So he needs to be able to show he can recruit with the resources available and the talent pool available here in Texas. That was a you know, Bo Davis specialty. So he'll need to be able to do that. Just needs to teach these big giants who are already there to, you know, be violent in the middle and win kind of knife fights, you know, close range warfare, and just kind of motivating them. I think as much as any position, motivating the bigs to say, you know, you're going to get recognized, right? Just soak up blocks, do the ugly work, do the grunt work. If you go get sacks like you know, Byron Murphy, that's even better. But, you know, the defense, interior defensive line coach is kind of keeping those dudes selfless and hungry and big and violent. If you could do those things and then recruit and keep that pipeline going, I think that's what's needed there. So I'm going to remain optimistic and give Sark the benefit of the doubt on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's doesn't have a long history of recruiting, but I think with Texas's NIL efforts and the other coaches they have, there's an opportunity for that to not be that big of a deal. But he's a development guy, and I think Texas needs to develop, especially with the way they've recruited in the last few years at interior D-line. I think it's going to be an opportunity for him to show his stuff, and so I love the development pick there. And again, I think, you know, the pedigree speaks for itself. The coaches he's worked under speak for themselves. But again, jury's still out. We'll find out in, 6 months?
All right, Joe, let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. Starting with the NFL playoffs, Longhorns, a couple of them left as they fought each other this weekend in the AFC. Tuck and Dew fell to Chuck. Omena, who was probably the most dominant out of those, Justin Tucker, didn't get a ton of chances. Devin Duvernay, I loved the commentators as they pan from, and I'll talk just a moment, but Chuck Omenihu on the sideline as they were talking about him to Devin Duvernay about to field a punt for the Ravens. And it was, you know, the camera lingering on one Longhorn, and they said back to return is Devin Duvernay, a dangerous return man for the Ravens. I loved, like, there was 30 seconds where the whole football world revolved around Longhorns. But it was Omenihu who came out on top, but ultimately in the longer term had some negative news, even though he had a great game, had a great performance, looked dominant, looked like he was coming into his own. We got some negative news this week after today. I think we're recording this after the game.
Yeah, Charles Omenihu, who recorded a strip sack in that game, tore his ACL, so he will not be suiting up for the Super Bowl, which absolutely sucks. You work your entire life to do this and doesn't get there. Yeah. It sucks. Absolutely sucks.
It does, and it's heartbreaking for him. 7 sacks, 2 forced fumbles in the past 11 games, really coming on strong. There will be a Longhorn in the Super Bowl, Longhorn in 18 of the past 19 Super Bowls, because if you want to view it this way, Longhorn beat Aggie. I was kind of rooting for the Lions over the 49ers before I realized it was a Longhorn versus Aggie in the NFL coaching ranks. But head coach Kyle Shanahan looks to become the second Longhorn coach to win a Super Bowl. I'm sure we all know who the first is. That's right, listeners, Tom Landry. All right, Gerald, the NFL draft is 3 months away, but this is the final push for some of those guys who are soon to be transitioning into the NFL ranks to make their name. The East-West Shrine Game is on February 1st. We have Ryan Watts participating there, and as we've said, Jonathan Brooks and JT Sanders, who both are not participating due to injuries, but will be attending. And then the Senior Bowl on February 3rd will be all eyes focused on Vondre Sweat, and Christian Jones will be playing in that one.
Yeah, Murphy's got an injury that's nagging, but he's also getting like top 20 draft hype. There is a specific defensive lineman out on the West Coast that people are making analogs to for his build and his skill set. So I'll let you put two and two together there. So he is not on the roster. Neither is Jalen Ford and Jordan Whittington. They accepted the invite, but they're not on the rosters. Again, weird things happen in these Senior Bowl situations, but, you know, I think Murphy's probably working to protect some of that draft stock. I think T-Sweat has an opportunity to bolster some of his draft stock, you know, but it's interesting to see. And again, the draft is just a couple months away.
Yeah, I saw some videos out of there of Ryan Watts playing, you know, pretty good cornerback, goal line cornerback, breaking up a pass in the end zone, some practices, and should have had an interception in the end zone, but dropped it. You know, look good in some of those. Hopefully he makes a little name for himself. Heard some buzz he may be a potential candidate for a safety position move if that works out for him at the next level. So interesting. These guys are looking to do something on the field. And then, again, those ever valuable interviews that with the NFL GMs that are just as valuable, trying to make an impact and impression on someone there so that in 3 months' time your name will be called. Gerald, a couple awards. It's shortlist season in basketball. It's kind of get the midseason point, 2 on the women's side, 1 on the men's. Maddie Booker named final 10, top 10 for the Cheryl Miller Award, which goes to the small forward. Taylor Jones named final 10 for the Lisa Leslie, which goes to the best center. And then on the men's side, Max Asmus named final 10 for the Bob Cousy Award, which goes to the top point guard. Gerald, who do you like out of these three is most likely to, let's just say, get to a finalist, top three, not necessarily maybe win, but get to the top three out of these three players?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, it's probably one of the ladies, I would say. Like, if I had to put Too fine a point on it. Probably. No, that's fine. I think Booker. I'm going to say Booker. Okay. That's what I'm going
with. I like it. She has been just racking up awards all year, so that would make sense. Acemus.
Darnier dropped a 30 burger over the weekend.
That's right. I don't know. Acemus maybe gets the Lifetime Achievement Award here. I don't know. We'll see. He needs to start scoring like 25 a game for the rest of the year. That would make me feel better. Couple more notes here. Freshman Faro O'Keefe and Lauren Kim have accepted invitations to compete in the 2004 Augusta National Women's Amateur held in early April, obviously playing on the course in Augusta, playing Augusta National, playing the week before the Masters. Very, very cool. They did this last year. Open to just the best in the world, and Texas has a couple participants, which is pretty awesome.
Texas golf is one, you know, really incredible. Having two freshmen in that field is absolutely ridiculous. Again, that's what Texas golf does.
Yeah, I mean, it was Coach Ryan Day, you could just see, was not Ryan Day. Coach Ryan Murphy was pretty impressed. I don't think he was surprised, but again, he was emphasizing that it's hard to get two in a small field of the best, not just in the U.S., not just in the college ranks, but in the world. But to get two freshmen really shows the program is in a good spot, but it's building for a good spot for years to come. It's exciting what I think those freshmen have done and what the future holds for that women's team. Gerald, taking it at home, spring schedule. We know this is Director's Cup season. Tennis, golf, swimming, both the basketballs obviously in flight. We have some big sports kicking off in the next 2 weeks.
Big is almost an understatement, right? Obviously, tennis and golf are already going on, but we are in diamond season. Kyle, diamond season is upon us. The softball team throws out their first pitch on the 9th of February, while the baseball team throws theirs first on the 16th of February. And we got the baseball alumni game in there as well. And also, just throwing this out there, rowing. Those boats are about to hit the water.
That's right. Yeah, we have March SMU, I think, is their opener.
I think so.
And so coming up in just a little bit of time, we have some wins to report on this podcast, because they will likely be, as they have been the past few years, one of the favorites in the country in that sport. Forgot to mention track, obviously indoor going on right now. The outdoor season will kick off a little later. So still a lot of sports to get going here in the 23-24 calendar year. Gerald, let's take it home. What have you been watching on your giant screen? Time for a little Godzilla-tron.
Yeah, so I continuing to read the book's called Leviathan Wakes. It's the first book of the Expanse series. And I am out. I was in a book slump, and so I decided to switch from fantasy to sci-fi, which it's different enough to make it work. Still good. I'm halfway through. It's massive. There's a lot of politics and stuff, which I actually appreciate. I'm watching, somehow I missed this, but first half of season two of Invincible is on Amazon. I love that show. Really, it's, dark comic book superheroes doing mean things to each other, so it's always fun. And then this last week, this is going to take a minute. Jordan Peele dropped the trailer for Dev Patel's new action movie that he directed and starred in, called Monkey Man. And so it's based on like the Hindi fable mythology of the white monkey. That's kind of like this revenge figure, but it's basically Dev Patel like just kicking ass and taking names. And I'm really excited for this Dev Patel action hero era. And a lot of people are invoking John Wick for the action sequences, but the real ones know that anytime you see a fight in a kitchen, you think of The Raid. And so I went back and rewatched both of The Raid movies. And let me tell you, never a bad choice. Two of the best action movies of the last, I don't know, probably 15 years. The original Raid, absolutely just perfect. And then The Raid 2 is just, it's more convoluted. They try to do more with the plot. Didn't need to. Just let me watch these Indonesian men fight in their own native martial arts style. And I had a blast.
You know, I've never seen The Raid, and it's been, from you and others I trust and respect, it's been added to my shortlist many times, and I've never done it. And that's on me, Gerald. I am wrong. And I should rectify that. I will at some point do that.
I'll stand on a table for it any day of the week.
All right. I did watch a movie that I remember when it came out. I don't know. Let's call it 2017. I don't know. Somewhere around there. I added it to my list. Like, ooh, that looks like me. That looks like the type of thing I would like. I never saw it for whatever reason. But finally made my way to it. One of those, wife fell asleep, and I was like, eh, what's on? I think it was Netflix. I'll throw this on. I was a bit off there. 2014, as I look it up. Monuments Men. Gerald, did you ever see this?
I have not, no.
So it's, I love the cast. I think it's a George Clooney produced film as well, but it's Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, Kate Blanchett, Bob Balaban, who I know you love. It was a fun cast. It was a fun premise. Like, basically, the Monuments Men were, it's based on a true story. It seems to be some people's issue with it is that they maybe exaggerated or, you know, filmized, linearized some of the story to make it more consumable in a short film. But anyways, it's about a group of people who were tasked by the president during World War II to go and actually, like, recover and value, determine what the greatest pieces of culture and art that would be destroyed by this, you know, world war. So there was like, hey, go over into Brussels and Paris and like look at these monuments, these buildings, these things that are so irreplaceable, and, you know, we'll try to help. Can't confirm, but try to help steer our people away from bombing those, or keep conflict away from those, or if they're famous art pieces, keep those, right? And then what it ended up finding out is that it was actually the Nazis were doing this incredible effort to just steal culture literally from all of these countries that they were invading and send it back into Hitler's proposed like Führer Museum, which was to be the world's largest and greatest museum with basically all of the art from all over the world. Like every great artist you've ever heard about in any class you've ever had, like that was happening. And so then their plot was to find these, and they found like hundreds of thousands of pieces of art in these mines buried below the ground as they, you know, made their way and marched through Germany. It's a pretty cool premise and story. It's not particularly well reviewed, but I don't know why. Maybe I'm zigging where the critics zagged. I actually enjoyed it. I think it's got like a 6-something on IMDb, and that's fine. I loved it. I liked the cast. It was all the guys from the Oceans movies and good movies that you like who are just lovable. The premise to me was wildly interesting. It was such a different World War story that I really enjoyed it. Again, I won't say it's the best movie I've ever seen. It didn't challenge or push anything. It was just kind of a feel-good, good movie. There was a couple times when like I just thought it was going to skew into like satirical Inglorious Bastards, and it just didn't. And I had to keep reminding myself it wasn't that movie. But it, you know, it felt a little bit like a fourth of that ethos. It was pretty good. I didn't mind the time I spent watching it. So yeah, go check out Monuments Men if you're interested in World War II, and specifically interested in like just that. To me would be like one of those fascinating 3-hour Wikipedia deep dives, but instead I had George Clooney curate it for me.
It felt too Oscar baity for me, I think is why I skipped it. Mm-hmm. It felt very Oscar baity.
Sure.
Just not,
sure.
Not in that place at that point in my life, but that's okay. But that brings you to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. Also, Prize Picks. We haven't had a Prize Picks pick today, so Kyle's going to talk about numbers, so it felt like the right time to go Prize Picks. Remember, use Longhorn 12 when you download the app. You can get a instant deposit match of up to $100 using the code Longhorn12. That's Longhorn12. If you don't know how to spell Longhorn, I don't know how you got here, but it's best legal way to play player props in states like California, Florida, Texas, and more. Just make those stats picks in everything you can think of. College basketball, MMA, soccer, NBA, all of the above. The big game on Sunday. We can't use the actual term because it's copyrighted, but whatever. You know what's coming up. Have a little fun. Prize Picks. Longhorn 12.
All right, Gerald. I am prize picking my bang the drum this week on some numbers. Yeah, you're right about that. If you feel like you've been in a little bit of a 2024 sports hangover, you feel like it was more fun last year, maybe your team didn't make it all the way in the NFL playoffs, maybe your NBA team's not going, maybe you even feel a little bit down on the Longhorns, it's not unfounded. The Longhorns had a like almost inconceivable start to the year, right? When you think about usually being a spring sports team and a volleyball team that, though they faltered in the beginning, just went on a tear and beat everybody all the way to the end. A women's soccer team that overachieved and put on a run of a couple weeks where they were just untouchable. A football team that performed to where we wanted them to for a change, right? To get into the college football playoff. There was a stretch. They started the year in the month of August when it was just a couple sports playing. 9-2, a really strong start, but you expect that, non-conference, all those things. September was probably the largest, you know, slate of games as things kicked off. 16-3 with two draws, right? You're getting soccer in there, obviously. But it was two weird volleyball ones. They now volleyballed, lost three already. It was a weird place to be. Soccer lost to BYU in September. BYU was world beaters at the time. And so, you know, it all felt good. October, incredible. 17-2, though, those two were football and women's soccer. To OU, which you never want. November, though, Gerald, is where things really took a turn. They had a 21-1 November with their only loss being soccer. They were soccer losing to eventual beat everyone in the country champs, FSU, from a perfect November. And so things just went into the holiday period on an unprecedentedly good run on the 40 acres. And then in December, 11-2, with women's basketball losing to Baylor in that post kind of Rory Harmon malaise, and men's basketball losing to Shaka. So not the teams you necessarily want to lose to, but still 11-2. So you're looking at this and it's like, wow, you haven't lost more than two games in a month up to this point across all sports, which is crazy when you break it down and kind of put these lines on it and think about it that way. However, January, Gerald, 10-8 right now, if my math was correct. And again, if you double check me and any of these numbers are off, it's fine. I did some collating myself late at night. So feel free to fact check me. All my friends who listen to this podcast, looking at you, Rick, or I don't know, probably Brett, the smarter people than us. But January 10-8, just if it feels like it's been a little bit slower to start 2024, I feel you. A lot of that is probably men's basketball, a little bit of weird women's basketball. Didn't count swimming in here, admittedly, so maybe that skews our numbers a smidge there, but they've been pretty good. I think both top 10. So it's off to a slower start, but I still have hope, Gerald. I still have hope that the spring is going to be sprung. As we said, we have a lot of horsepower ready to ramp up. Didn't count track in here either, but track, tennis, didn't count that. There's a lot of tennis to be had, a lot of wins coming in there. Golf, a lot of wins to be coming there. Obviously, rowing, and then the diamond sports, as we mentioned earlier. So a lot of wins still to be had, but an incredible, incredible fall semester when you count the wins that Texas did have and the losses that they didn't.
I mean, it was an absolutely incredible way for Texas to close it out. They're in better position for the Director's Cup than they were a year ago, and they were right on the outside looking in for that. So, again, a lot of opportunity left on the table for Texas, and had a great time getting there. I'm banging the drum this week on two quick things. Well, we already talked about this, but the way Vic Schaefer and his team responded to an absolute pants wetting against OU cannot be understated. And it talks a lot about his abilities as a coach and as a leader to build rapport with his team. And really, you can only coach your team hard if they know that you love them. And it's very clear that they do because of the way they responded, right? A team that doesn't feel like their coach loves them responds to that in a very different way. They don't respond with a 17-point win, right? So that's just something to call out there. And I'm also banging the drum this week because I have to do it. Hugh Freeze just announced that he's hiring DJ Durkin to be their defensive coordinator, and it's just incredible that how many terrible people get extra shots in this industry that is college football coaching. Absolute terrible person hiring an absolute terrible person, and that's all I've got to say about that.
It's interesting because you just talked about Vic Schaefer and
juxtaposition.
Kind correct. Of. I mean, and I was thinking you're going to go juxtaposition on Rodney Terry versus Vic Schaefer. Terry kind of going what most fans thought was soft with the horns down rant. I think he's admitted he was wrong for that. And then Schaefer, you know, laying into his own players and challenging them to bring more. But yeah, I think the juxtaposition you made works because, like you said, Vic Schaefer's a good man. Vic Schaefer's a man who you can only coach as hard as he does if you're a good enough man that your players love you, buy into you, believe in you, trust you. I've never met someone who's ever dealt with Hugh Freeze in any capacity, right? And even listened to podcasts like people who've covered him who thinks he's a good man, who enjoys him, who likes him. Like, if he wins at your school, you're going to enjoy the wins. But on a personal level, I've never heard someone say a nice or good or positive thing about Hugh Freeze. He's just, he's a schmuck. And of course he hired DJ Durkin. Like, of course. These things, I don't know. It just makes me frustrated. I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to. I'll leave it at that, Gerald. You're right. Let's leave some things unsaid, but everyone can understand where we both come from on that one.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with some more great Longhorn coverage. But until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. March is our month. Undefeated March.